I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. We're talking about The Power of Grayskull. This is the Netflix documentary that is available now. It is an absolutely fantastic documentary, my humble opinion. I'm going to just kind of go over some general impressions. The first impression is going to be this. If you love He-Man, if you love Masters Universe, if you're a child of the 80s, why have you not watched this documentary? You could say, I don't have Netflix, which I could say, I'm sorry. But anyhow, if you have Netflix, if you have access to Netflix, if you know someone who has access to Netflix, you owe it to yourself to watch this Power of Grayskull documentary. It answers every question you could possibly have about He-Man, including some you even didn't know that you needed answered. If you enjoyed, also on Netflix, they have The Toys That Made Us. If you enjoyed the He-Man episode, this is that times 10. And it is so thoroughly fascinating because they delve into other things that obviously The Toys That Made Us doesn't. They do a deep dive into the film, which I'm excited to talk about. It is absolutely amazing. Cannot recommend this documentary enough. So tell me, Eric, had you heard about the Power of Grayskull documentary on Netflix?
I don't recall hearing about it until you pitched the idea of us reviewing it. I don't specifically remember hearing about this documentary. Not sure why. Apparently that this was a Kickstarter funded project, so I assume that it was out there for quite a while they were trying to raise the funds and also do the interviews. Until a lot of the interviews are done at conventions and things like that, that's where a lot of the interviews are done for a lot of the participants. But yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised, to have you recommend this to me and have a chance to view it. I grew up as a He-Man fan. I really feel like the movie is a kind of very underrated sort of like a cult classic, if you will. I understand the problems of it, but I own it. And that's a high praise for me because I don't have a huge DVD or a Blu-ray collection. And I do own Masters of the Universe. I saw it in the theater and they do talk about this. In fact, I feel like I want to do my own Masters of the Universe movie documentary just on that, you know. If anything, I want more. But seeing the process of the creation and everything like that, it's really quite fascinating to me. And I really enjoyed it. And I do recommend this to people that are fans of He-Man, that are fans of things or interested in things like toy manufacturing. We don't have a lot of behind the scenes where we talk about how toys are brought to life and the people that bring those toys to life. And it's really neat to see that. And then also see the Filmation people and the story of Filmation. I really enjoyed it. It's a good film.
It's really interesting because they talk about how at the beginning of the documentary, they talk about that for toy sales, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, the thing that really drove toy sales was basically licensed properties. So they talk a lot about how securing those licenses and producing those toys, how that was an important part of basically the overall strategy of selling toys to children. One of the ones they highlight, which was interesting, is Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, that was interesting,
Yeah, and Clash of the Titans was interesting because they managed to get everything together. They got all the products and everything tooled up, ready to go. They got it in stores, and that the toys were selling great until people actually started seeing the movie. And then the toy sales basically flattened out. It's interesting. I remember having a bunch of the Clash of the Titans toys when I was a kid. And my brother
loved that movie more than Star Wars. My brother loved that movie.
I still like it. I still like Clash of the Titans. I prefer the original one to the remake they too. There's just something interesting about the original one that's still kind of fun. But it's just interesting that they talk about all that and how important that was. And because of what had happened with some of the previous licenses, it hadn't gone well. You know, for example, like with Clash of the Titans, that they basically ended up passing on Star Wars, which ended up being the huge boon for Kenner. and actually took Kenner from being sort of like an annoying competitor and actually catapulted them to the stratosphere as the toy maker of basically, I think, several decades after that. It was very interesting. And that in the process of trying to find something that would work, that they were doing kind of market research stuff. And a lot of things were driven by this market research and this toy testing they were doing with children. And He-Man kind of spins out of that. But the thing that made He-Man unique was the fact that it was an in-house created property that the company owned outright. So they didn't have to spend a lot of money licensing things. And it's interesting
there is,
too.
There is the Conan controversy though, and they do address that in this documentary. Because they did have a license to produce the Conan toys. And obviously there's tons of comparisons between Conan and He-Man. And they do address it directly that they were going forward with the Conan toys, even though they found out after. It's kind of funny that you think like a big company like Hasbro, especially as big as, right? Not Hasbro, it's Mattel, right?
Mattel, okay.
I didn't want to mess that up.
Right.
So Mattel, big company, especially as big as it is today, you know, Barbie and things like that, these huge products that they have, they didn't realize when they got the Conan license that Conan was going to be rated R. I'm like, who the hell was working in your licensing department? You know what I mean? That they didn't know stuff like that, you know? But they got the Conan license and they were kind of disappointed because they found out later that it was rated R. And there's a controversy about that because they actually, I think they got sued. Because basically the producers of Conan were saying, hey, you just screwed up with your He-Man thing. You were supposed to be making Conan toys. Instead, you're just doing your own thing with He-Man, which is a ripoff of Conan. And they do address that and say that they did produce the Conan toys, at least to some stage, and nobody wanted them. The buyers just didn't want them. And that's what happened with Conan.
Well, it's interesting, too, because they do talk. But part of the point of that whole story, too, is that they talk about the failure of Clash of the Titans, and then they talk about the Conan thing. And no one calls it out. I do think there's this kind of underlying subtext that sort of, you know, when they saw the questionable content of Conan, they just knew immediately, well, this is just never going to work. And I think also, too, they realized, well, if Clash of the Titans isn't going to work, how is this thing going to work? You know, Conan didn't have the...
It's not what they said in the documentary, though. In the documentary, he said that they made the Conan toys, just nobody wanted them. That's what right. that was the assertion in the documentary.
In my opinion, I'm drawing my own conclusions. I just feel like there's this subtext that I think they were kind of like going, okay, if this isn't work, I don't see how this is going to work.
Manasanet mentions there was a Conan cartoon made that wasn't rated R. Was that in the same era? I don't remember the Conan cartoon.
The Conan cartoon, I think, was in the 90s. It was actually quite a bit after. The Conan cartoon anime cartoon was about the same time as that live-action TV series. They had a lot of people forget. There's like all these forgotten versions of like Zorro and Conan where they made these shows. They were on like some of the syndicated networks that would pick them up. This same era the Conan cartoon was made was when you saw the Phantom 2040, which is the Phantom in the future. You had the Highlander animated series. Nobody remembers the Highlander animated series anymore. There was a whole bunch of stuff.
The Highlander animated series. I actually do remember that.
But that's the same time period.
But I don't think, to get more to Man of Sand's point, I think, question, but I don't think that was during the era we're talking about. We're talking about the first Arnold Schwarzenegger movie came out, and that's the license that Mattel had. They had the license for that.
Yeah, that's
and
what
it's
I'm saying.
It's an R-rated movie, so.
That was in the 90s, very clearly not during the same time period at all, much later. It's actually after He-Man had already kind of run its course. But it's interesting how they talk about all that. And how it kind of sets the stage for He-Man and the Masters Universe and how everything kind of comes together. They show a lot of really good, like if you're someone who loves looking at art, they show all these really amazing original design concepts for He-Man and Skeletor. They talk about some of the naming and how they were I can't remember if it was the head of product or marketing or something. He was just trying to keep this whole man theme. So they had He-Man and Beast-Man and whatever.
It wasn't Beast-Man. Beast-Man was like Dog-Man or something like that originally, or something really silly like that. It was like,
but the craziest one was at one point Merman was actually called Sea-Man, and it was Sea-Man. Just like, yeah, that's not gonna fly. And they keep going into it and they just flesh out, like, because I don't want to spoil it, but they just flesh out how this all came about. I really can't recommend this enough. They talk about the New Adventures of He-Man, which was sort of the more animated spacefaring one that came out after the film.
Oh, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
Bobby says, the doc was great. Love seeing all the original concept work. And that is a real strength of this documentary, is seeing what's really neat is you actually see some of these people digging into their personal archive. And you can see a lot of this stuff is just kind of like jammed together. And it's like, oh, here's the original version of this. And it's just like all crumpled up and everything like that. They have to unfold it, you know, and they've got mounds of this stuff because, of course, these artists were producing work all the time. They produce all sorts of stuff that was never produced. You know what I mean? So they've just got mounds of artwork that they show, and they do a pretty nice presentation where they'll really focus on that particular piece of art and the concept art. I wonder if they had like a special, I imagine they had something for their Kickstarter people. And if they had like a gallery or something like that, I actually wanted more of that. I actually wanted to see more of the toys and more of the concept art, because I think that was a real strength of this particular documentary, was all the concept art. And I actually would have liked to have seen a kind of more of a catalog of the toys themselves.
Well, and along those lines, I want to recommend there's a, I tell you what, Eric, do you mind vamping for a few minutes? I'm going to go grab it.
Go ahead. Yeah. So, but in regards to the original concept art, I really enjoyed that in this this particular documentary. So I'm going to kind of go off and talk about, because we touched on it, which was the, I guess, the New Adventures of He-Man. That was one area where I found that this documentary was lacking. I actually remember that show. I did actually watch it when it was on, and I actually kind of liked it. And it's kind of funny because I think the producers of the documentary don't like that series. They kind of are a little dismissive and talk about, like, the way they set it up is they talk about all these kind of silly ideas that people had. Like, apparently there was going to be like a G.I. Joe version of He-Man. There was going to be like a sports version of He-Man. There were going to be all these different versions of He-Man. And then somebody kind of came up with a space version of He-Man. And that led to the, I think it was called the New Adventures of He-Man, which I'll say the artwork is very, very different. But then again, all the iterations, all the different animated He-Mans are very different. But I felt like they really just sort of glossed over that particular version of He-Man. Again, I'm just speculating that the producers just didn't like that version. I know it's not a popular version, but I did watch it when it was first run, and I rather enjoyed it myself and thought it was kind of interesting. Very different art style, but I like science fiction. I guess it's more sci-fi fantasy, and He-Man always did have that element anyway. They always had vehicles, flying things, robots, all that stuff. So the whole He-Man in space thing wasn't that weird to me. I think it was a way that they can introduce a lot of new characters. And I remember kind of liking that story arc. Man of Sam says the New Adventures of He-Man had a totally different art style and an even more anime look, very different from the Filmation version. And they did address that in the documentary. They talked about that there was a desire to go with a more of an anime style with the New Adventures of He-Man. But I will say, as a small criticism of this documentary, I felt they just kind of brushed aside the New Adventures of He-Man and didn't treat it with a lot of respect, honestly.
Well, I want to bring this up. So there is a fantastic book that actually is available. This is the Art of Masters of the Universe, He-Man, the Master Universe. So if you love just really great art and concept art, this is the book for you. This thing is absolutely amazing. For example, Eric, you were talking about seeing a lot of the early, you know, concept type art. There's all kinds of amazing stuff in here featuring all the different versions of the characters. I guess I've got too much glare going on there. Never know which way to go. But there's all kinds of just awesome stuff in here. They've reproduced a lot of the art actually from the, of course, the mini comics in here.
Oh, nice.
And then they have two. It's just, gosh, it's just so amazing. There's all kinds of stuff in here. So this book is absolutely amazing, but they have a lot of Earl. I'm a huge fan of Earl Norum, who's just this tremendous illustrator. And he did a lot of these just really great He-Man illustrations that they use for a lot of the packaging art and the posters and stuff. I mean, this thing's just full of cool stuff. So yeah, if you're a He-Man fan, Master Universe fan, I can't recommend this book. And I mean, this thing's just full of this stuff. I mean, it's just full of it. Look at that. So yeah, this book is totally worth the price of admission. This is very much like the Transformers one that we talked on another episode about. If you're an artist, if you create art, if you're looking for something that's, you know, fun for inspiration, I recommend this. I recommend the Transformers books, the Lord of the Rings books. I mean, this stuff is just absolutely killer.
Man of Sand had a comment. I think going back to the New Adventures of He-Man, some people mock the Pageboy haircut of Filmation's He-Man. Was that an attempt to make him more kid-friendly as opposed to an R-rated Conan look? Yeah, I don't remember them talking about his hair because He-Man's hair is actually very distinctive. And that is one topic I don't think they actually talked about in this documentary is where did He-Man's haircut come from?
Yeah, they didn't really talk about that. I would imagine that He-Man's hair is just an outgrowth of what they could do with the limitations of the way the head needs to turn. That would be my thought. And of course, we've got the original He-Man action figure actually here on the screen. So I think it's just the limitations of how the character was sculpted and what they could pull off versus what works with the articulation.
It's a great question, though, and I'm surprised that the filmmakers didn't address it at all because he does have a very distinct hairstyle, both the toy and in the Filmation series. So in fact, I think that's one of the reasons some people didn't like the New Adventures of He-Man was because he had a different hairstyle. And they were that's not He-Man, you know?
I think overall it was too different at the end of the day. I didn't hate it, but it just I think it was just too different from what people were familiar with. So I do want to touch on it. And I do want to cover it on the show. I do actually want to talk about the Masters Universe film on the show. I want to do a retrospective on that film at some point, Eric, because I love that movie so very much. And Frank Langella's performance as Skeletor, for me, is still one of the best. I mean, you want to talk about a maniacal, world-conquering villain. I love that his performance as Skeletor. It's so great. From the first moment you see him walking in the throne room and he's putting the ram staff and he's kind of hitting it down as he's walking. And then Evil-Lyn says, after all these years, Grayskull is ours. And he turns around and he screams, no! And he sits down and he gets real quiet, clutching that staff. And he's like, mine. I love that. I love that. It's such a great performance. I love it.
I can't say, in regards to the documentary, I was actually really surprised, very pleasantly surprised, how much they got into the film and the fact that Frank Langella and Dolph Lundgren both gave interviews for this documentary. That actually shocked me. It shocked me because I thought that I just had it in my head that these guys wouldn't give them the time of day, which really shows how cool these guys kind of are in my book. You know what I mean? That they did do this documentary and they're super candid and they talk about the hopes, the aspirations, what they were trying to do, kind of they talk about where they think they might have gone wrong and where the production kind of went wrong. You could do an entire documentary just about the movie. And this particular documentary is packed with content about the movie. And even if you don't like the movie, I always think it's fascinating with movies that are not necessarily box office hits and have sort of a controversy to them and aren't necessarily well received and kind of seen the anatomy of how that film was put together and maybe why it has some of these issues. One of the things that was really interesting was seeing the production designer was heavily involved in this documentary and showed William his Stout. Concept art. What's that?
William Stout.
He showed his concept art for when he was putting the film together and they were trying to decide how He-Man was going to look on screen. And it's really interesting because he had this philosophy that he didn't really think He-Man needed to look like He-Man. And it's funny how filmmakers do this because it happens a lot, you know, when it comes to licensing products and things like that, when a film takes an established license, and we see it all the time, when something that's established in another medium, whether it's comics or toys, is adapted into film or television, a lot of fans get that reaction of, that doesn't look like, you know, so-and-so. It's funny because the design they went with, he actually said that was his least favorite design. And of course, it still pretty much looks like He-Man. You know what I mean? The one they did do on screen. He's got a cape. He-Man didn't really have a cape. But for the most part, he looks like He-Man, you know? Dolph Lundgren's final version. But that's the version he hated. That's the version he didn't like. He had all these other different versions with like armor and things like that. And he makes an interesting point, you know, because there are two modes of thought. You know, some people are think like, well, the movie doesn't have to be like the cartoon, or doesn't have to be like the toy. We can make it different. It doesn't have to be that way because this is quote unquote real life. And then there are other people that say, no, go with something that's like screen accurate. It's like the Wolverine debate, and people talk about the yellow spandex, and a lot of us still want to see Wolverine in the yellow spandex. And what's funny is when you talk about this stuff and all these different, like for instance, the original X-Men, they changed the suits radically because they said it wouldn't work on screen. Well, we see with the Avengers, they have very classic comic book inspired costumes, and it's what everybody loves and it's what everybody wants. So it's kind of an interesting philosophy just to see that. For me, as someone who has done some film work, I just think it's interesting to see that different that different approach, and how there are two very different ways of thinking when it comes to this. And especially we have to think about the time when Masters of the Universe was made. And that was during that time where it was like the original X-Men. Well, let's put them in something completely different because that stuff wouldn't work. You know, that comic book stuff wouldn't work. You know what I mean? So it's really interesting to see him. And I think of him as designs were pretty cool. But the one thing I wish they would have addressed, because I really, the thing I was most disappointed with in Masters of the Universe in terms of costuming and all and look was Teela. I always thought Teela was just like, well, that's not Teela, you know, and that doesn't look anything like Teela. It's like Teela's, you know, very sexy, you know, and they even talked about the toy even is sexy, you know, and the way that they actually ended up doing Teela in the movie, I was always like, why'd you do that? And Frank Langella did mention, he said he was in very, very good shape when this movie was made, and he wanted to show off his skin. He wanted to show off his body at that time because he said he had abs and the whole deal. And it's like, well, yeah, why didn't you do that? You know what I mean? I always assumed it was because Frank Langella just wasn't in that great of shape. That's literally what I assumed, you know, is that that's the reason that he doesn't really look more like Skeletor. And he said he wanted to. He wanted to look more like the screen version of Skeletor because he knew about He-Man, because the whole reason he really did it was because his son was such a big He-Man fan, you know? Stuff like that is fascinating to me.
Well, here's just a couple things real quick. First one is William Stout is absolutely fantastic artist. I've had many, many conversations with him back in the days that I used to attend San Diego Comic-Con. I own a lot of his sketchbooks. I'm a huge fan. And I've had actually more than a couple of conversations with him about his work on Masters Universe, actually one-to-one personally. And it was a real jazz, and I had a lot of fun actually seeing him like in the documentary and hearing him talk about, because I'd heard a lot of those things before, you know, actually from him. So it's interesting to see him on the documentary talking about them. But here's how I view the Masters Universe film. And like I said, I want to cover this on the show and do a major deep dive on this film. I have always viewed the Masters Universe film as how the cartoon ends. So Skeletor and He-Man are constantly having all these battles, the never-ending battles that happen that establish everything. That's the cartoon. And then the movie is how it all ends. Skeletor's older, He-Man, like everyone's older. Years have passed. They've been in constant battle. Skeletor has finally managed to claim Castle Grayskull. He's going to take the power. This is it. He's conquered Eternia. The conflict between him and He-Man, it's all about to come to an end. And that's what the film depicts. So it's many, many years after the cartoon. He-Man has given up his identity as Prince Adam. Everyone just knows that he's He-Man. That's the way I've always viewed the movie. And in my mind, from the first time I saw it, that's the feeling I got from it. And so I've never really had a lot of questions about any of the inconsistencies in terms of its relatability to the cartoon, because I always felt like, well, this is their final battle. This is how it ends. This is the end. You know, for the cartoon. So that's my own personal view on the film and how I've always looked at it. And that's how, because I remember the first time I saw it, I had that feeling. Well, this is the final battle. You know, this is how it all ends. So That's
except it doesn't. Except it doesn't. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen Masters of the Universe.
I know.
One of the first post-credit scenes ever.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be back.
Yeah, I always love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, I had this thing for a while that I thought every movie should end with Skeletor coming out of the sludge and being like, I'll be back. Like just every movie in existence, no matter what genre, should just, the ending, after the credits roll, Skeletor should just come out saying, I'll be back. I really think that should be a thing.
Man, if they'd had that at the end of an MCU movie, everybody would have lost their minds trying to figure out who that was. What is he talking about?
That's why they need to do it. That's why they need to do it. Like I said, every film, regardless of genre, I don't care if it's like some drama about the Holocaust. At the end, Hitler comes out, you know, with the sludge.
Right.
But I like that film a lot, but I do question some of the visual choices. And it was interesting to see the production designer defending those choices and talking about that and talking about some of the limitations and things that he had as far as concerns or whatever. I love a lot of the design. Like I wish they were used more because I liked the Eternian like soldiers. And I also liked the Skeletor shock troops. I loved those when I was a kid, the shock troops. They reminded me a lot of stormtroopers, but I just thought they were really, really cool. Really, really cool. And I used to like reenact those battles in my living room all the time with those shock troopers and stuff like that. Cause there's some great action scenes when those shock troopers are attacking and stuff like that, breaking through windows and stuff like that. Overall, I really like the movie, but I do have some questions about some of the visual choices. So honestly, I think it could have been a lot sexier than it was. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. Cause the only one who's really showing skin is Dolph Lundgren as He-Man,
right.
You know, Teela, Evil-Lyn, and apparently, you know, even Frank Langella saying that he could have pulled it off too. You know, I mean, that is a big part of it. As far as the visual stuff goes, get people that are in good shape and, you know, cause that is a big part of He-Man. I mean, it really is. So it's called He-Man. I mean, let's just go for it. You know, right. It's called He-Man. Right. So let's have some really good in shape actors and let's show some skin and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's just my thing. So
I did love too in the documentary hearing how much Frank Langella, you know, enjoyed playing Skeletor, you know, how he approached it. And it was just so much fun because in my mind, when I think of him in between filming those scenes, I see him approaching it and taking it very seriously in the context of the film. And it was so great to hear him talk about the film. And that's pretty much what he did. I just love the idea of what I imagined how he would approach it was how he was actually approaching it. Because I love that part where and they talk about, you know, trying to give Skeletor all these wonderful lines. And one of my favorites is that where he talks about, tell me about the loneliness of good, He-Man. Is it like the loneliness of evil? Like, I love all that
stuff. I love that. Oh, I love that line.
Oh, my
God. I do, too. I love that line. I love that line.
So great.
I would say, I think a lot of fans probably think that you know, Frank Langella didn't like this. And, like, it's sort of like a dirty secret for him. And no, he says that he really was into it. You know what I mean? And he's proud of the work and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of refreshing to see, because a lot of times when you have some of these very well-established actors that do something, you know, that's really genre-y, you know what I mean? Or like I said, in this case, it was not like a huge box office hit. They kind of disown it and they won't talk about it. I mean, even look at Harrison Ford's the way he is with Star Wars, you know what I mean? And that like made his career, and it's a huge thing. And you'll see the way they treat it. And he's not like that. He's like, that's some of my best work. You know what I mean?
I love that. That's one of the things that, because for me, when I look at, you know, because he played Dracula too. Like, he's played some amazing roles. But I just love his turn as Skeletor, because it's, you know, you just don't, you know, the power mad dictator villain kind of character is something we're kind of getting further and further away as villains become more nuanced and more layered and more textured and blah, 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 blah. I get it. Okay. But in the never ending battle between good and evil, you need that great villain. And Langella is so great as Skeletor. And he finds a way to make it uniquely his, still Skeletor in every aspect of the word. But at the same point, he does bring a gravitas and kind of a grounded aspect of it. You know, when he's kind of talking to Evelyn and he's like, why do the people resist? I count on you for these things, you know, and he's just being very, there's just this wonderful thing about him. It's like, you know, he's totally evil and to the core, but he's so fascinating, you know?
But is he really, Dave? Is he really at the end of the day?
Yes, he is. That's one of the things I love about this portrayal. He is.
I'll tell you something. Growing up during the 80s, there's this reason that we call this the retro rogues, and we are the retro rogues. I have always identified with the villains in so much of the stuff I grew up with because they always lost. And therefore I would feel sorry for the villains, and I would be kind of like, why can't Skeletor win a couple of times? Why can't Megatron win a couple of times? You know what I mean? Why can't, G.I. Joe was the worst. It was like, why can't the Cobra guys actually shoot anybody? That's why I like the comics, by the way. Because in the G.I. Joe comics, they killed characters. Yeah. They shot characters. Cobra was dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, that kind of stuff, because I grew up on so much of it, I really had an affinity for those characters. I like Skeletor more than I like He-Man. You know what I mean? I like Cobra Commander more than I like Duke, especially Destro. Destro has a lot of layers too. And I like Destro more than I like, Duke or Hawk or any of those characters. Not the same with Transformers. Optimus Prime is the best. I mean, I'm not going to go that far. Optimus Prime to me is like Superman level superhero to me. But, I still thought it would be, well, I can't say that because they actually killed Optimus Prime in the movie. So they totally went overboard in that regard. They actually killed them in the first movie. But, I did have like this affinity growing up, because to me, the bad guys almost became like the underdog. You know what I mean? It was like they were constantly losing, but they kept trying. They kept trying. One day I'll get you. You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. So,
I was going to say, one of the things I love about the Master Universe movie, because it's Skeletor's day. He's won. That's where the movie starts. It's like, finally, after all this time. And
I
like time,
that. I remember as a kid. You know, I
love that.
I was like, this is so cool. Skeletor won. Yeah. He took Grayskull. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Dan Stevens says, I started liking wolves because they were always beat down in the fairy tales. And I can relate to this. It's funny. You know, I had a conversation with my kids not too long ago. We talk about our favorite animals. I always say it's the wolf. Wolf is my favorite animal. I've even been called a lone wolf before, and things like that. So I relate to that as well, you know. So, but we you're right. We could do an entire episode about just the movie, you know. So I think we should talk a little bit more, go back a little ways.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And we should talk about things like, one of the things I always thought was all the different continuities. Like, I remember reading some of the mini comics, and I wish I still had some. I don't know what happened to them, because I did have some He-Man figures from the first generation and stuff like that. And I know I had some of those comics. And I remember those mini comics, the story was like so different than what Filmation did. And they did talk about that in the documentary a little bit.
Well, what's interesting about the very first one, which is the Power Sword one, that's the one that's actually pictured in a graphic there. I still have that one. I have a lot of my original He-Man mini comics. They actually, just like the book I showed you earlier, they did actually collect all the He-Man mini comics into one huge volume. It's about $50. It's totally worth the price of admission. It's so wonderful. But the artwork by Alfredo Alcala, and if I'm pronouncing his name incorrectly, I apologize, but I have loved his work since I was a kid. I have some of his actually Spanish language only things that he's done that I picked up from collectors over the years, because I love his work. And it's because of the Power Sword story that I actually got with my original He-Man action figure. And what's interesting about that Power Sword mini comic story is, number one, it's not really like a comic book. It's more like an illustrated story. Number two, the artwork is completely beautiful. And then number three, even though Skeletor is evil, he comes across a little bit like a misunderstood guy when you read that, because he's basically talking about the origin of Skeletor. He's basically accidentally been pulled through a portal that some of the wizards and different people who used to own Grayskull, who've disappeared, they were apparently doing some manipulation of something, and he was actually ripped from his planet and brought to Eternia and trapped there. And part of the reason, part of the reason he wants to control Grayskull is so he can open a portal and go back to his homeworld. Of course, he also wants to bring more of his people there in Conquer Eternia, but that's just beside his real goal is really to go home. Yeah, he's just like E.T. He just wants to go home. But it's really interesting, and I love the artwork. The artwork is beautiful. I've always loved Alfredo Acala's ink work, the watercolor treatment to the art. It's just, it's so beautiful. Like, I literally, when I was doing Bushi Tales, I used to pull that out and flip through it and hope I would somehow pull inspiration from that mini comic. Because the world of Bushi Tales, one of my early creator-owned series, was intended to be, in my mind anyway, like my version of that idea. And unfortunately, Dan, let me apologize right now. The wolves actually are villainous characters in Bushi Tales because they are villainous characters in all of, you know, old school literature. So as a true hack, I took that idea and ran with it. Of course, my wolves were actually werewolves. They weren't just regular wolves. They were a group of ancient Greeks called the Pelasgians who were actually cursed, and they turn to wolves, and it's revealed throughout the story that initially you think these creatures that are hunting everyone you think are just wolves, eventually they're revealed to be actually werewolves, and they've been cursed for centuries by the ancient Greek gods. But anyhow, I've pulled so much inspiration, and I love those He-Man mini comics so much. And there's so much just wonderful material, and I've tortured people with my horrible He-Man pitch idea. I've even tortured Eric with it because I would love to revisit the world of He-Man and do something with it, because I think there's so much wonderful material here. And that's one of the things that's really great about this Power of Grayskull documentary on Netflix is you're watching it. And we're not sponsored by Netflix, by the way. It's just a wonderful documentary.
Oh, I should say that is actually one of the big motivations for why we decided to do this, was because on a previous episode, we were talking about the new Netflix series that's going to be coming out, and the amazing cast announcements that were made for the new He-Man series coming to Netflix. So that was one of the big motivators for why we wanted to review this documentary and talk about it on the show, because there is some He-Man buzz going on right now.
Yeah.
So one of the other things, you know, that was interesting was that they talk a lot about the creation of the Filmation series and some of the things that people did on the Filmation series. You know, the creator of Babylon 5, J. Michael Straczynski, is on this documentary because he was heavily involved in the Filmation version of He-Man, which is probably like the definitive He-Man to me, you know, because I grew up with that. That was kind of like, I had the comics, the little mini comics that came with the figures. But I remember thinking, like, I used to think this a lot because, like, for instance, G.I. Joe, the comics were very different than the cartoon. And so with He-Man, I kind of had that kind of opposite thing, like, whereas with G.I. Joe, it was like the comics are the real version of G.I. Joe. That's really G.I. Joe. That's like war. That's like, I understood that enough. I was like, that's like war. But with He-Man, I was more like, no, the cartoon's the real version of He-Man. The cartoon is what He-Man's really like. You know what I mean? This stuff is a little weird. You know what I mean? That's how I remember kind of thinking of it as a child. They do a lot of, in this documentary, they do a lot of information about Filmation and the Filmation series. They talk with the voice actor who did Skeletor quite a bit. He's in this documentary. I guess they talked about something I wasn't aware of, which is that the actor that plays He-Man doesn't really do the con circuit, doesn't really do interviews, apparently is very, very shy and just has never really gotten into it. You know what I mean? As far as doing that kind of stuff. So if people are wondering about that, I guess that's why he's you don't see him a lot at like cons or again, like interviews. He didn't participate in this project, which is a little disappointing, but I understand why. At least they had talked about it and they addressed why he's not in it. So that stuff happens with the documentaries. You can't always get everybody that you want or should, you know, get, because sometimes they don't want to be involved. Avery Brooks wasn't involved with, you know, What We Left Behind, the DS9 documentary. So, there are little things like that that I thought were interesting. We probably should talk about it. I'll be honest. I never got into the last animated series. I don't know if you did. It never really appealed to me. They do spend quite a bit of time on this documentary, though, about the last animated version of He-Man. I think that's the one that was on Cartoon Network, I want to say.
Yeah.
Did you watch that? Were you a fan of that?
I did enjoy the new version quite a bit. It was actually by the animation actually came from a company in Korea. And it's a pretty good He-Man cartoon, in all honesty. It's pretty good. It approaches the material obviously differently than Filmation did, but it keeps a lot of all the classic Filmation. When you think of He-Man, all those elements are there, you know, so it's not as jarring as the live action film, for example. It rings more true. They spend more time fleshing out things like, you know, they give Skeletor an origin. They talk about the fact that He-Man's mother is from Earth, which was obviously hinted at and talked at in the original Filmation. But they get right down into it and basically say that she was an astronaut from Earth who accidentally was trapped on Eternia.
They did that in the Filmation. They showed that explicitly. They did a flashback about her, and she was an astronaut. And they even had a Christmas special where they go to Earth, and so that it's kind of an infamous He-Man Christmas special. But that was fleshed out in the original Filmation that she was an astronaut from Earth.
Yeah, I remember that, but I couldn't remember to what extent. It's been a while since I've seen that episode.
They even showed her ship and all that stuff. Yeah,
I actually do own every version of the Filmation cartoon on DVD, I don't own the new one, but I did enjoy it. I was collecting some of the newer action figures for a little while from the new show. And then what I ended up doing was when they released the later ones, they talk about the ones that were aimed at the more, I don't want to say adult collector, that sounds weird, or, older collector doesn't make me feel very good about myself. But anyhow, the later ones that they talk about, the Four Horsemen.
No, a lot of the later ones are definitely geared towards adults. They're definitely geared towards the collector's market.
So I have actually, most of them were gifts from my brother, who's been on the show. He actually got me because when we had a conversation one night, and he's like, so if you're going to own any He-Man thing, he's like, what would you own? And I was just like, well, you know, I really like the newer sculpts that they were doing. And I said, it'd be cool to own technically the original Masters Universe line, because I bought Masters Universe figures way before the cartoon was even on the air. The first one I bought was actually Man at Arms, because I love weapons and stuff. And I just loved his look and like all the weird armor with the look like a respirator or whatever. Like I love that look and the mace. And
no, I always liked his armor.
Yeah.
I always thought his armor was really cool. Yeah.
So that was the first one I actually bought, and I bought it pretty much sight unseen. And I read the mini comic and I loved it. And I was just like, this is really cool. So I was actually buying the He-Man figures on the basis of just those mini comics and just the toys themselves. So for me, actually, the mini comics were actually the real story, and the animated cartoon was a little weird. I told my brother, I said, well, if I was going to own anything, I like the new sculpts. I said, I'd like to own the original line. So my brother actually got me because originally Master Universe was four or five figures. So you had He-Man, Skeletor, Beast-Man. I think it was more like six, because I think Merman technically counts in there. But I have
it's eight. There were eight figures, basically four on each side, depending on how you look at Zodiac. Because he was supposed to be like neutral or something like that.
Right.
So Analog Toys has a great episode about the first series of He-Man. I actually watched it really recently, where they go through all the toys and stuff.
But he actually got me the entire, like, quote unquote, original Masters line. So I have the Four Horsemen sculpt versions of the original Masters line that's in the packaging that replicates the look of the original toys. I have all of those. I gotten off track from the new cartoon, but I did enjoy the new cartoon. Just like the voice actors, I was a little shocked that it ended as abruptly as it did. I think if that cartoon had been on Netflix in the same way that Voltron Legendary Defender was on Netflix, I think the He-Man cartoon would have still been going. I don't think it would have ended as abruptly as it did when it was on Cartoon Network. You know, there's a lot of things that the networks give up on. They go, oh, this isn't working. And they just jettison it. And in reality, there's this whole, there's like these legion of fans are going, well, wait a minute, I was watching that. So I did quite like the new cartoon. It was a bit of an
update. I honestly, it never appealed to me. I never got into the new one. You know, I think I tried to watch a couple episodes. Of course, that's probably after, I can't remember what year that came out. It was probably around the time that I was cutting the cable. I may not have had access to it at that point, and that might be one of the probably the biggest reason I didn't check it out much. But it just didn't interest me. And again, I'm the guy who's sitting there like, well, I like the New Adventures of He-Man, and nobody else likes that. So, I again, that's one of my criticisms of this documentary is I wish they had talked about the New Adventures of He-Man, but I just don't think they liked it. So they some of them were, some of the people that they were talking to were closely involved with the new series and also the new comic books, which was kind of an interesting story where they were talking about how they actually got a lot of fans to work on the comics during that era, that it was like a very much like a fan produced comic book. And they actually, one of the ways they were able to sell that was that they would take more established artists to do covers, but they were the alternate covers. Even the main covers were being done by the quote unquote fans, which I thought that was interesting. It makes me kind of want to check out those comics because I never was into them. I never picked them up, but I did find that story fascinating.
Yeah. The ones that were actually that Val Staples and, I can't remember Esteban. I can't remember his last name. Those comics are actually really good. I actually have all those on my shelf over here. I quite enjoyed that series a lot. They show that Boris Vallejo painting actually of He-Man on Battle Cat fighting Skeletor, and it's kind of an Earl Norum kind of looking painting. I actually have that framed. It's not currently hanging in the studio, but it used to because it actually hung above my Master Universe collection. I have a lot of my original toys still. I've still got Panthor and Skeletor, and I've got a bunch of stuff, Ram Man. I've got a whole bunch of stuff still left from when I was a kid, and I would put those with the new stuff, and then I would have that poster above them. But the comic series is actually pretty much every version of the He-Man comic series has been good. The only one I'm going to diss is maybe not the later ones, but some of the early ones that DC was doing, not originally, but when they tried to bring it back, like in the early aughts, because Scott and I made a huge, heavy pitch to be put on He-Man and they wouldn't put us on it. So I'm not going to say anything good about that series.
And by the way, just Dan's taking right off. So, hey, Dan, just want to acknowledge you. Thank you for commenting. He says, gotta go. Have a great night. Dan Stevens, thank you for commenting. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. But there's all kinds of wonderful content for He-Man. That's the thing. It's like, and the thing that was interesting about that is the fact it was fan driven, you know, fans were kind of behind that. And you can, when you read those comics, you can feel that, you know, it's just got a different quality to it. It's intangible, but you can tell that people who love He-Man, you know what I mean, are producing this work. But yeah, I have a full collection of all those books. I really love them. So yeah, I highly recommend that series for people that are interested in it. I'm excited for the Kevin Smith, the Netflix series they're working on. It's got a tremendous voice cast. It's interesting. I think there's a lot of possibility for He-Man here to have an interesting revival. So I think maybe the timing is right. We'll see.
They did. They didn't really talk about the production of it, but they did show a small 3¼ scale He-Man collectibles that have come out fairly recently. I think it's Reaction that does those, or Seventh Wave, yeah. one of those companies. They have, like, I've actually seen those in comic book stores. They look really cool. What I like about them, of course, is that they're the smaller scale and they take up less space because I don't have any space in my house anymore. I thought it was neat they showed that. I wish they had actually like talked about them more. My guess is as the documentary was made, those were like just coming out. And then also one thing I've seen in stores that they don't talk about in this documentary is they have the cartoon accurate He-Man series out like in the direct market at comic book stores, which are pretty neat. Like, it, you know, it's like Teela really looks like the Teela on the show. You know what I mean? Right. Adam really looks like Adam from the Filmation show. I just wanted to talk about those because those are not mentioned in the documentary.
So Man of Sand has an interesting comment. I have an interesting response to that. I'm sure there will be Man of Sand. And additionally to that, I'll also add that if you enjoy He-Man, there's a series that's either just finished or currently still running. And what they've tried to do is take all the different versions of He-Man and say they exist on different Earths, kind of like the multiverse idea. And they're all coming together in like a big, huge final battle. I can't remember the name of it, but I've seen quite a bit of the art for it kind of here and there. And then they did, too. I don't want to disparage because some of the DC work they've done lately is quite good. I'm a huge fan of Freddie Williams, and he did a really, really great He-Man series that DC published actually just a few years ago as well. All of that content is really wonderful. So if you're a He-Man fan, I highly recommend checking out a lot of the newer content if you're interested in it, because there's a lot of great comics work currently being done. But then beyond that, I'm pretty sure they'll do something to support the Netflix series. And because one, Kevin Smith's a big comic fan. Number two, Kevin Smith's a published comic book writer. I think it would only make sense that Kevin Smith would want to have like a tie-in comic that would go along with this project. So I think there will be.
For listeners, Man of Sam's comment was, will there be any content, for example, comics put out as a result of the new Netflix show? And the bottom line is we're not sure. We don't really know for sure whether that's going to happen. I would agree with you. Being that Kevin Smith is involved, you would almost think that's a no-brainer, but you never know. You really never know right now. It all depends on the market. That would be what I would say, you know what I mean, how the market's doing. But we'll see. I think I actually remember when I was going through some of my old comics, I do think I had a couple of Masters of the Universe in those value packs you used to get, where you would actually have these reprints packaged together. You could buy those in toy stores and things like that. So I did have a few of those 80s era Masters of the Universe comics as a kid.
I had actually years ago, I actually bought my brother, because the first time He-Man actually debuted, he actually fought Superman. A lot of people don't know this, but the first He-Man story is actually a DC Comics Presents story, which is actually pictured in the background back there. But in that comic, He-Man actually fights Superman. Well, my brother loves He-Man, and his favorite superhero is Superman. And so I bought him that like 1 year. I think I didn't even pay $20 for it, because in those days it just, you know, I mean, it didn't have a lot of value. And now that book is actually worth a pretty penny. I should have bought two copies. So I don't even own. Just bought it for him.
I don't think I remember that book. I mean, I was like really thinking about, I was like, do I remember seeing that book or anything like that? And I don't think I do as a kid remember seeing that.
Yeah, it's but no, I think there's tons of potential with He-Man. This documentary, I think, just kind of reminded me of that. I reminded me of aspects and things, you know, happens in the production of a toy line and a cartoon and a comic book. But along those lines, also showing me things or reminding me about things that I kind of forgotten of, too. You know, some of the more gimmicky, you know, toys they created and stuff. It's just terribly fascinating. And the breadth of the line too, just the number of figures and all the different things. And it's just really, really interesting. So just to wrap it up, if that's okay with you, Eric, would you recommend this, documentary, on Netflix, Power of Grayskull?
Yeah, I would say if you're a fan of He-Man, it's a no-brainer. If you're not a fan of He-Man, it's still really interesting if you are interested in things like toy making and the process of how toys are made, interested in the process of animation, how animated TV shows are made, if you're interested in filmmaking, interested in the way that films are made, specifically with licensed properties and things like that, comics, if you're interested in the way comics are made. I mean, there's a lot there. In fact, the only little criticism I could say is each one of those subjects could have been their own documentary.
Right. That's true. That's very, very true. Cool. Well, I would highly, highly recommend this documentary, just for about anyone that may find it remotely interesting. If you're a creative professional and you're curious about sometimes how certain things might be created or how they might be cultivated or put together, I think this is an interesting story. There's a lot of do's, a lot of don'ts, you know, from a creative professional standpoint in terms of like lessons to be taken from it. It's really, really interesting, and I highly, highly recommend it. We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Five the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BASSGOD14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.